Thanks for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. This week, Pastor Ken continues our series, The Gospel According to John.
Last week, Janetta asked us this great question, coming out of John chapter 12, what would you want written about you? She shared some of her family history, how one of the grandparents was a family historian and would write down all the different stories of the family, and compared that to this guy, John, this friend of Jesus, this disciple of Jesus, who wrote down all these things about Jesus and the followers and even the dissenters. And she challenged us with that thought. What would you want written about you? Because something is being said. Something is being written about you. When you get to the end of your life, you know, on behalf of all pastors everywhere, here's something. I do weddings and I do funerals. And you'd much rather see me at a wedding than a funeral. But on behalf of all pastors, please give us something to say of quality for you. Please give me something that your family will celebrate that will be easy for me to say, or some other pastor. Because someday someone will stand over your casket and they'll attempt to make your life sound wonderful, even if it wasn't. But it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier if what you want written about you is already being lived out. And I thought that was a great challenge by Janetta last week. Well, I want to show you a picture of Steak and Shake. Have you heard of Steak and Shake? Yeah. Steak and Shake. They are known for their world-famous steak burgers and their world-famous milkshakes, thus the creative, innovative name, Steak and Shake. They also have pretty good French fries. But Steak and Shake. I guess there's one here in town, but I've never been, and I'm guaranteeing I'm probably never going to go. And it's actually a 30-year-old grudge. Okay, years ago, I was at Indiana Wesleyan University in Marion, Indiana, just an hour northeast of Indianapolis. I was attending school as a student. I was in the university corral. We were doing a concert at what's called Praise Gathering. It's a big event that was put on for years and years by Bill and Gloria Gaither. You guys ever heard of Bill and Gloria Gaither? Yeah? Some of you haven't? Yeah, I'm old, so get over it. So we're doing this praise gathering, and we do this concert, and it's this incredible night. And afterwards, six, seven, eight of us guys, you know, in the tenor and bass section, six, seven, eight of us go out to Steak and Shake. They're almost every location open 24 hours a day. And we go in, and we're seated. It was seat yourself. There was a sign, please seat yourself. So we go in, and we sit down, and nobody waits on us for 5 minutes. Now, in the food industry, I know somebody here that's in the food industry. If you don't wait on somebody or at least say hello within the first 5 minutes, that's a problem, right? But most customers will give you 5 minutes, but then it hit 10 minutes. Now, that's like unacceptable range, right? Like somebody's going to get reprimanded later on in the manager's office. Then it hit 15 minutes, still nobody. 20 minutes, now somebody's going to get fired. 25 minutes, and we saw staff moving around, and finally, a guy's walking by our table with a mop, and not mopping, he's just walking by with a mop, and one of the guys in our group, a friend of mine, Ryan, says to the guy, hey, excuse me, we've been here about a half an hour, and nobody's waited on us. Could you help us out or get somebody to help us out? And he goes, not my job, dude. Not my job, dude. That's a little bit of a problem in the food industry. Just thinking. That's a problem in most industries, right? Not my job, dude. I mean, here at the church, we have different organizations working here under one roof. And so whenever a guest comes in, whether they look familiar or not, if we don't move within a minute or two or less, we're on each other about it. We just understand that whether I work for the church or Carol works for Immigrant Connection or Jessica works for the Counseling Center or Janetta's running the daycare or even all the staff with the daycare, that we do our best as a ministry team, regardless of area of responsibility, to greet, to welcome, to say, how can we be of help and of service to you today? We try really hard to do that. Not my job, dude, in this place. Monday through Friday, and Sundays too, somebody'd be packing up their desk. Somebody'd be finding other work. We come to John chapter 13. And here's what it says. You can read along on the sheet, on the screen, in your Bible, whether it's hard copy or on your smartphone or tablet or phone. Here's what it says. Starting in verse 1, we're going to read all the way through verse 38. Before the Passover celebration, now let's pause. Before the Passover celebration, you guys, just to make sure everybody's clear, we've talked about it before, but just in case, we've got to catch anybody up. Passover. What is Passover? Why are they celebrating Passover? Why it's a capital P? Because the Jewish people, the Israelites, in the Old Testament, right, they were in captivity. They were in slavery in Egypt. And Moses, you remember that guy Moses? He was trying to lead. He was a stutterer. He tried to work it out with God that he didn't have to lead. But he eventually became the leader. And he'd grown up in Pharaoh's palace. And now he's leading the Jewish people, the Israelites. And he goes and he says, please let my people go. My being not just Moses, but God's. Let God's people go. And Pharaoh says no, because he likes all the free work. I mean, they're slaves. They're getting a lot done. Pyramids are awesome for a reason. And Pharaoh says no, so God says, I'll send plagues. And the final plague, the 10th plague, was the angel of death that passed over. And the Jewish people had been instructed before the angel of death came over, paint your doorposts with blood. Not just any blood, but the blood of a pure, spotless lamb. Paint it. If you paint it, your house will be protected. It will be guarded. If you don't, if you fail to do so, your firstborn son will die. And there was weeping and wailing all over Egypt because the Egyptians had not painted their doorposts. I'm guessing every Jewish person had painted. I would hate to think, in all seriousness, if you forgot or didn't get to it, what that would have been like the next morning in your home. So the Jewish people, as a result, Pharaoh, you know, all this weeping and wailing, he lets the people go, and that's when they start heading out toward the promised land. It took a while to get there. You have to read the Old Testament for all that. But Passover, they're celebrating here now, hundreds of years later. We never, ever, ever, ever forget, right? Even on this national holiday, this Independence Day, this 4th of July weekend, people still talk about Pearl Harbor. People still talk about September 11. There are things that are in our psyche as a nation, as a people, that we will never, Lord willing, forget. Passover is one of those things. And so they're celebrating, and there's this ritual. But it says, before the Passover celebration, Jesus knew that his hour had come to leave this world and return to his Father. He had loved his disciples during his ministry on earth, and now he loved them to the very end. It was time for supper, and the devil had already prompted Judas. So, okay, got a couple new characters introduced here. The devil, he prompted Judas. Judas, one of the disciples, son of Simon Iscariot. He was also known informally as one of the disciples who took care of the money, so he was the treasurer. So I always tell churches, beware of the treasurer. Okay, that's a joke. Okay, so he'd already prompted Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, not a funny one apparently, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had given him authority over everything and that he had come from God and would return to God. So he, Jesus, got up from the table, took off his robe, wrapped a towel around his waist, and poured water into a basin. Are you hearing it now? It's not my job, dude. Do you hear that? Do you hear that in this story? Jesus got up from the table, took off his robe, wrapped a towel around his waist, and poured water into a basin. Then he began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with a towel he had around him. When Jesus came to Simon Peter, Peter said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus replied, you don't understand now what I'm doing, but someday you will. No, Peter protested, you'll never, ever wash my feet. And there's an exclamation point. He's pretty indignant here. Peter's like, no way in the world you're going to wash my feet. And Jesus says, Peter, unless I wash you, you don't belong to me. And what's Peter's response? Then wash my hands and head as well, not just my feet. I'm all in. Jesus replied, verse 10, a person who is bathed all over does not need to wash, except for the feet, to be entirely clean. And you disciples are clean, but not all of you. And then there's this aside in verse 11. For Jesus knew who would betray him. That's what he meant when he said, not all of you are clean, referencing to Judas. After washing their feet, verse 12, after washing their feet, he put on his robe again and sat down and asked, "Do you understand what I'm doing? Do you understand what I was doing? You call me teacher, you call me Lord, and you are right, because that's what I am. And since I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet. I've given you an example to follow. Do as I have done to you. I tell you the truth, slaves are not greater than their master, nor is the messenger more important than the one who sends the message. And now that you know these things, God will bless you for doing them." And Jesus continues in verse 18. He says, "I am not saying these things to all of you." So he's really starting to single out Judas a little bit, isn't he? "I know the ones I've chosen, but this fulfills the scripture that says, 'The one who eats my food has turned against me,'" which is from the book of Psalms. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And he says, "I tell you this beforehand so that when it happens, you'll believe that I'm the Messiah. I tell you the truth, anyone who welcomes my messenger is welcoming me, and anyone who welcomes me is welcoming the Father who sent me." Now, there's like a little turn here in verse 21. Now Jesus is deeply troubled. He's deeply troubled. And he exclaims, "I tell you the truth, one of you will betray me." The disciples looked at each other, wondering what he could mean. Now, a little bit later, and we're not going to show it now, but a little bit later, I've got a picture that kind of shows what it might have looked like for these disciples to be sitting around. You know, we think of our modern way of having a meal together, even a big group. It doesn't look exactly in that day what it would have looked like today. So he says this, Jesus says this to everyone, "I tell you the truth, one of you will betray me." I'm guessing that's not a quiet statement. But the next part of this conversation seems that there's an aside, that not everybody gets to hear this whole conversation. Follow closely with me. If you don't catch it, I can explain it to you later. But it says, verse 23, "The disciple Jesus loved," which is, by the way, the disciple Jesus loved. That's John's way of referring to himself. So John is basically writing and saying, "I was sitting next to Jesus, and Simon Peter motioned to me to say, 'Who's he talking about?'" Which is a little unusual, because Peter's a pretty loud, outspoken, brash kind of guy. I would imagine him at the table, like, in front of everybody, like, "Who are you talking about, Jesus?" But he doesn't. He kind of quietly, or speculating a little bit, but it seems that Peter's quietly speaking to John, saying, "Who's he talking about? Go ahead and ask him." You know, every now and then here at the church, you know, Daniel will say to me, hey, Jim said something to me the other day. What did he mean by that?" And I go, "Did you ask him? No, could you just check in with him?" And I've done that too. I've heard Janetta say something. We even share an office together, but I'm like, I forget. And so I'll say to one of the daycare staff, "Hey, Janetta mentioned that the other day. What'd she mean?" They go, "Well, ask her." And I'm like, "Well, could you check?" We just do that conversationally sometimes. And so Peter and John are having this. So the disciple, John, verse 25, "The disciple leaned over to Jesus and asked, 'Lord, who is it?'" Are you all with me, or did I just lose you? Okay, so let's continue. Jesus responded, "It's the one to whom I give the bread I dip in the bowl." Now again, I don't know that they all heard that. I think John heard it. Maybe Peter heard it, or he relayed, like, it's the one that dips the bread. Okay. "And when he had dipped it," when Jesus had dipped it, he gave it. Jesus gave it to Judas, son of Simon Iscariot. "When Judas had eaten the bread, Satan entered into him, and Jesus said to him, 'Hurry and do what you're going to do.'" Verse 28, "None of the others at the table knew what Jesus meant." And that's why I wonder if they didn't hear the whole thing. Because it says none of them knew what was going on. So it seems there's this aside conversation that not everybody hears. But now John and Peter, and of course Jesus, are in the know. Judas is in the know. But not everybody knows what's going on. In fact, verse 29 says, "Since Judas was the treasurer, some thought Jesus was telling him to go and pay for the food or to give some money to the poor." And you're like, well, they didn't already pay for the food. Well, when you go to a restaurant, do you always pay first? Or do you go and you get your food and then they bring you a bill and then you pay the bill and you add a little tip? You should add a big tip, right? Especially on Sundays. Don't be cheap Christians. And so Judas left at once, going out into the night. Right? Thank you, Gail. "As soon as Judas left the room, Jesus said, 'So now the betrayer's out of the room. It's lockdown time. Listen closely, everybody. That's what Jesus is saying. The time has come for the Son of Man to enter into his glory, and God will be glorified because of him. And since God receives glory because of the Son, he will give his own glory to the Son, and he will do so at once. Remember, before I read any further, we are about 24 hours away from crucifixion. 24 hours away in John 13 from crucifixion. Dear children, in verse 33, Jesus says, "Dear children, I will be with you only a little longer. And as I told the Jewish leaders, you will search for me, but you can't come where I am going. So now I am giving you a new commandment, love each other." And I know some of you are like, "Didn't he already say that? Isn't that obvious? 3 years? Really? That's what you got to say, Jesus? A new commandment, love each other. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples." So Simon Peter, here he is. There's the Simon Peter I know. He speaks up. "Lord, where are you going?" And Jesus replied, "You can't go with me now, but you'll follow me later." "But why can't," this is Peter, "why can't I come now, Lord? I'm ready to die for you." And Jesus answers, and I don't think he's chuckling. I don't think it's, I think it's, "Oh man, Peter, you have no idea. Die for me? I tell you the truth. Before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you'll deny me three times. You'll deny three times that you even know me." Observation number one. Quiet confidence is extremely reassuring. If you're taking notes, quiet confidence is extremely reassuring. Write it down, lock it in. It's true. I read through this passage, and I'm amazed by Jesus. I really am. We're less than 24 hours from crucifixion, and he seems to be pretty calm. I mean, I look at this next slide where we look in verse 1. Jesus knew his hour had come to leave this world. Verse 3, Jesus knew the Father had given him authority over everything. Verse 31, the time has come, he says, for the Son of Man to enter into his glory, and God will be glorified because of him. There's this quiet assurance going on. Jesus is incredibly self-aware. The time has come for him to leave his disciples. The Father has committed all action to his authority. The betrayer is in the room. The identity of the chosen believers is settled. The moment of consummation, here it comes. And Jesus seems pretty chill. He seems pretty relaxed. I mean, there's that part where he's troubled. Somebody's going to betray me. But he seems to, like, he knows who he is. He knows what he's about. He knows what's going to happen. Here we go. And so that thought, that point, that quiet confidence, it's extremely reassuring. And, you know, Todd threw this picture up a couple weeks ago. This is our family. I think most of you know that. That's me. Look closely. I'm in a suit. You don't see that very often. But Karen and I are there with our son Mason, our other son Marcus. You know, Mason's been in training for 2 years to be an officer in the United States Marine Corps. And so what a Father's Day. Father's Day weekend, I get to see him sworn in as an officer with the Marines. And I remember Carol talking about Robert going up the next level, and you get to help with the pinning, and we were able to be a part of that. And, oh, man, you're so proud. You try not to cry. And he's like, "Don't cry. Don't cry. This is important that you don't cry." And Karen's like, "I can't promise." And I'm like, "I can't either." And, you're so proud. But, you know, Mason's known since he was about 10 years old that he wanted to be a Marine. He has a huge heart for social justice. He hates it when dictators boil kids in oil and rape women and burn down cities. He hates that. Now, I know, some of you might say, and I know, our political system's challenging. I don't know that we're always on the right side of everything. I know that. But I'm proud of this young man and his heart to serve his country. I am. I'm equally proud of my other son, Marcus, who this summer is traveling for his school, and he's at youth camps, and every week he's reporting. He wants to be a pastor, and so he's studying to be a pastor. And I tried to talk him out of it because I'm like, you've seen my life. It's hard. It's challenging. It's not easy. And he's like, Dad, I want that. God's called me to that. And he's known since he was 7 or 8 years old. I can actually tell you of the time when he was called. Like, God literally called out to him. He kept thinking I was calling his name. He was having a Samuel and Eli kind of moment. And he came into our bedroom like, what do you want? And we're like, we're not calling you. And I mean, literally, God called him out at 7 or 8. My kids have known since a young age exactly what they wanted to do. That quiet assurance, that quiet confidence. They've had it their whole lives. But that's nothing compared to Jesus. Jesus is God. Jesus knew that he was sent to die. This is the moment, and he is fully self-aware, and there's this quiet confidence that Jesus exudes. Like, I hate it when they paint pictures of Jesus, and he looks like this frail, little, weak, little, wimpy, little dude. I mean, I don't know that he was like Arnold Schwarzenegger buff, but he was a man with strength under control who knew exactly what he was about. He knew his father's business. He knew it was going to be hard. But he had this confidence, and you see it throughout this section of Scripture. It's so powerful. So that's one of my observations. Observation number two, stinky feet aren't the only problem. Stinky feet aren't the only problem. You know, in verse 5, it says this, he, Jesus, began to wash the disciples' feet. Verse 8, Jesus said, unless I wash you, you won't belong to me. And so Peter famously replies, then wash my hands and head. You know, give me a bath, give me a shower, right? In verse 10, Jesus said, a person who's bathed all over does not need to wash except for the feet to be entirely clean. And you disciples are clean, but not all of you. I love how little kids can inspect their feet. I love how they can bend. Have any of you tried to put your foot anywhere near your mouth recently? You wouldn't want to. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you for that beautiful image in my head now. You wouldn't want to. And even if you tried, most of you probably couldn't do it. Now, don't start trying right now. But, you know, this washing feet thing, you got to remember, this meeting was in secret. Jesus had instructed, and we know this from the other Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, that he'd said, go and quickly assemble for this gathering. Preparations are in order. There weren't any servants present to do the dirty work. Now, you know, a word about servants, a word about slaves. Yes, slavery is awful. It's horrendous. I hate that. I hate that about our nation's history. I hate that about world history. And there have been slaves of all colors and all ethnicities, and it's horrendous. But you also need to be aware that there were people who would step into what is known as voluntary servitude, where they weren't necessarily mistreated, but they would actually work off a debt, and then they'd be free. And so there are some forms of servanthood, even in this time, that were what we would even consider appropriate. And I'm in no way saying that most of what I know of world history or even our nation's history is right. It's horribly wrong. But there could have been some people in voluntary servitude, but they weren't there either. And so Jesus, what does he do? He picks up a towel. He takes off his outer garment, and he begins to wash feet. In Luke 22 actually says that the disciples before this dinner had been arguing all the way there to the dinner about who would be the greatest in the kingdom. Now that's pretty interesting footnote, isn't it? So they're on their way to dinner, and the whole time they're arguing. Do any of you have kids and seen kids argue all the way to church or school or a restaurant? And then they turn into nice little princesses and princes and angels. And you're like, I don't want to pay for these kids. That family looks like they could use a couple more. I'm thinking it must have been very interesting for Jesus to hear this conversation. Who's going to be the greatest? Knowing that he was going to get there. And there wouldn't be any servants present to do the dirty work. And so there was a servant to do the dirty work. And that servant's name is Jesus. Stinky feet, though, aren't the only problem. Jesus is indicating that it's one thing to clean the outside of the body, but there's a heart issue. you know, I know, we know, you can take a bath or a shower, you can wash your hair, you can put on deodorant, you can spray on cologne or lotion up, right? And you can walk out of the house feeling like a million bucks. You can look great, you can smell great. People go, hey, looking sharp. And on the inside, you can be full of all kinds of crud and grime. And not just physically, but spiritually and emotionally. And we need Jesus to wash us. And not just our feet, everything about us. Observation number three. Ladies and gentlemen, a moment of silence, please. Have you ever been to a sporting event where they're honoring a former teammate or an employee of the organization, or they're acknowledging a national tragedy or incident, a worldwide event? You've seen it, right? In the NBA playoffs, the Major League playoffs, a hockey match. Ladies and gentlemen, please remove your caps. Let's observe a moment of silence. And there's always some knucklehead in the 20 or 30 or 40,000, right? Like, it's all quiet. They're like, woohoo, right? And they're like, seriously, right? And I say a moment of silence because I think we need to take a moment of silence for Judas. See, I can't explain Judas very well theologically. Verse 2 says the devil had already prompted Judas. Verse 11 says Jesus knew who would betray him. Verse 18 says this fulfills the scriptures from Psalm 41:9. It's actually David writing, and we think that it had to do with one of his commanders who had betrayed him during the uprising of David's son Absalom. Verse 21, it says, one of you will betray me. In verse 27, when Judas had eaten, Satan entered into him. And so, you know, Judas is talked about in Scripture as the son of perdition. It'd be better that he'd never been born. And I'm a huge fan of free will and free choice. I don't understand Judas. I would love to think that somewhere in the last moments of Judas' life that he made amends with God. And then someday we'll get to heaven and he'll be there too. I highly doubt it. But I don't know. I don't know. Scripture seems to be clear in other parts and then indicates in other sections it is. And I've heard people say, well, he committed suicide. And, you know, suicide is the ultimate form of selfishness. And anybody who commits suicide goes to hell. I don't agree with that at all. I think Judas had bigger fish to fry with Jesus. And that's why I say a moment of silence. Because every now and then I meet a Christian who seems excited about the fact that Judas went to hell. Or most likely went to hell. Or is highly probable, and, you know, that's what he deserves. Can I just look everybody in the eye, if I could, this morning and say, let's never, ever, ever get excited about the fact that somebody might go to hell. Let's never wish that way. Let's never hope that way. Let's never pray that way. Let's never say that. You know, when you're cut off in traffic, I'll go to hell. Don't ever have that attitude. My heart breaks for Judas. My heart breaks for anybody who's in a position where they'd want to turn their back on God. And yours should too. And if it doesn't, you need to wake your spirit up. There is a reality here that there is a devil. You know, they say that so many Americans don't even think that there really is a devil. Are you kidding me? Jesus talks about it. It's for real if Jesus talks about it. And we need to be aware of the enemy's schemes. We need to be aware that he's at work. We need to be aware that he doesn't want any one of us to follow after God. We want to be aware that he doesn't want any of us to do the right thing. We need to be aware that Satan will do whatever he can to get between us and our relationship with God and try and push us to the side and get us off course. So a moment of silence, please, for people who don't know that there's a spiritual reality and there's an enemy who wants to keep us from the things of God. A moment of silence, please. Another observation, commitment is more than a one-time event. It's more than a one-time event. Peter says, "Why can't I come now, Lord? Why can't I come? I'm ready to die for you." And Jesus said, "Die for me. I tell you the truth, before the rooster crows, you'll deny three times that you even know me." Now, I'm not saying commitment isn't a one-time event. I think it's both and, not either or. I love this picture that kind of shows the commitment that people make. And I thought about that. Like, have you ever made a commitment maybe to Christ? Have you made a commitment to Jesus? But then you've wavered in that commitment? I'm not saying you walked away or you denied, but have you ever found yourself like, "I made a commitment to Jesus, but whoo." Okay, anybody ever done that? Anybody? Just give me a Wesleyan nod or something, right? Come on, help me. Okay. Anybody ever made a commitment to a job? And you get in the job and you're excited about the job, but then, you know, a few weeks in or a few months in or a few years in, you're like, woo-hoo. Anybody ever made a commitment to a spouse? And, you know, you love them, and then yet, you know, a few weeks in or a few months in or a few years in, you're like, whoo. Come on. I'm coming up on 24 years of marriage. People are like, and that's awesome. Honey, thank you. Thank you for putting up with me for 24 years. Right? There should be applause there. Like, you know, you didn't make noise for worship, but you should make noise for that. People say, "How long you guys been married?" I say, "Almost 24 years. It's 21 of the happiest years of my life." Do the math. Here's the reality. You've made a commitment to Christ, a one-time event, to a job, a one-time event, to a spouse, a one-time event, to some hobby. Some of you make commitments, great commitments, to a hobby. You know, I look at Gail's ability to play the piano. Like, that took years of commitment. And it wasn't just a one-time event. It was weeks and months and years of cumulative effort. And not every day was good. She didn't practice all the time like she should have. But, man, what a skill. I was having breakfast with a guy from our church this past week, and I was talking about marriage. Now, he's got a family member going through a really difficult marriage issue right now. And I said, "Look, if you can find somebody that will put up with you and love you for about 345 days out of the year, you know, 365 days in the year, if you can find somebody who will put up with you and love you like crazy, 345, I'll give you 2 days every month where you're like, eh." I'm not saying do anything illegal or immoral. I'm just saying, do you love your job every day? Do you love your friendships every day? Do you think you are lovable every day? Now, some of you are like, "Yeah, okay, all right, then you're better than me. Good for you." But almost all of us at times have wavered in our commitment. And so it's not just a one-time event. It's an ongoing journey. It's an ongoing process. It's a recommitting of ourselves to the things of God. It's a recommitting in my marriage. It's a recommitting in my job. It's a recommitting in my friendships. It's a recommitting in whatever it is that really matters to me. Yeah, it's a one-time commitment, but it's an all-time commitment. Bottom line. Jesus invites us to assume the posture of a loving servant. Jesus invites us to assume the posture of a loving servant. Look what it says in verse 14 and verse 34. Jesus said, "Since I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet." Now that's interesting. Why don't we do foot washing ceremonies in churches? Number one, I don't think that's what Jesus really meant. There's one indication in the book of Acts where it happened, but it didn't catch on. Like today, we're taking communion, the bread and the cup. That caught on big time. Jesus was not necessarily saying physically wash each other's feet, although, hey, if you want to do it, I'm not opposed to it. It's just the reality that we assume the posture of a servant. And so what does it look like in today's culture? Think with me, please. What does it look like today in 21st century America and around the world? What does it look like to wash someone's feet, to assume the posture of a servant? What does it look like? Your answer might be different than mine. There might be a multitude of interpretations in this room, and I love it. Because you have friends that the way you would wash their feet is not the way I would wash my friends' feet. The way you would serve your family or your coworkers or your friends might be a little different than the way I would with my family, coworkers, and friends. But imagine if we scatter out of this place and all of us have this intention to go wash each other's feet and bless the people around us in a variety of ways with a multitude of interpretations. Wouldn't that be something if the church was actually unleashed? Church, are you not tired of sitting around seeing the same people who already follow Jesus? Isn't it time to get a few more people involved in what Jesus is doing in the world, in our nation, in our state, in our city, in our township? Isn't it time? Isn't it time? Please, please say yes, even if in your heart. It's time. He invites us to assume the posture of a loving servant. That image is powerful. But you remember Steak and Shake, right? You remember Steak and Shake. It's not my job, dude. Whose job is it? If it's not your job, whose job is it? Be careful. Be careful. There are workplaces where everyone assumes, well, that's the boss's responsibility. Now, I'm a fan of a delineation of duties. I'm a fan of that. But I'm also a fan of you go into an organization, a business, a company, and it's hard to tell who the boss is because everybody there has a servant attitude. Love that. In fact, it's so revolutionary in most businesses. They talk about it like it's a new idea. And I'm like, Jesus has been teaching this for a long time. I like that when people come here, they're not really sure who's the senior pastor. Well, is it Jim? Is it Daniel? Is it Ken? Is it Janetta? Is it Carol? You know, people that hang around, you know, and work here on a regular basis. Who's in charge? Remember what Jesus said? The greatest among you will become what? What did he say? The servant of all. The greatest among you will become the servant of all. You will assume a loving posture. You will assume the posture of a loving servant. And notice I added loving because he did add this command. Right? This new command, love one another. I tell you the truth, if you love one another, people will know you're my disciples if you love one another. I'm not asking you to serve begrudgingly or with an attitude. I can't believe he asked me to do that. I can't believe she said I have to do that. I can't believe, like, really? When my kids did that, when mom told me I got it, you know what? Go sit down. Why don't you think about what you're about to say or do or not do before I lose my mind. And Jesus says, have this posture of a loving servant. How can I help? It had to be confusing. It had to be a little embarrassing, right? Like when Jesus took off the outer garment and started bending down to wash feet, I'm sure at least one of the disciples said, oh, crud. Oh, crud, I should have done that. Jesus shouldn't have had to do that. Right? You're hoping, right? You're hoping somebody thought that. Maybe they didn't. Maybe they're like, well, yeah, it's about time, Jesus. I don't know. But assume the posture of a loving servant. So here's some questions I have for you. Who's someone you could serve today? Like literally, today. Who's somebody you could actually leave this place? We're going to take communion. Jim's got some closing thoughts, and we're going to get out of here, right? Who's somebody you could serve today and put this message right into practice and have a loving attitude, not a begrudging attitude, but a loving servant attitude? Who's somebody you could do that for? Where or to whom have you not been serving well? Is there a place where you've not been serving so well? And so as a result, the next question, what attitudes need to go away? Who is somebody you find hard to love or to serve? Like, oh, I'm tired of serving him. I'm tired of serving her. They never say thanks. They blah, 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 right? Is loyalty to Christ found in your words, your thoughts, and your lifestyle? Because you can do all the right action, but if your thoughts are like, well, I'll do it, but in your mind, you're that's a problem. How could you show Christ's love at home, at work, or in the neighborhood? That's the bottom line. Jesus invites us to assume the posture of a loving servant. When we say to Jesus, not my job, dude, Jesus says, really? Pick up a towel. Wash some feet. Serve. In fact, I want to add this. Jesus said to John, John was asked by Peter, who's the one that's going to betray? Let me take you back to that moment. Right? Peter says, who's he talking about? And so John says, who is it? And Jesus says, the one who dips his bread in the bowl. And then did you see the scripture? What did it say? It said Jesus dipped the bread. And we know it would have been like this mix of sauce and meat. And he dips it and he hands it to him. Now, we might just say, well, yeah, that's obvious. That was his indicator. That's the guy that's going to betray me. But do you know that in that culture, in Jewish culture, to actually, as the host of a meal, to dip and to present was a sign of great esteem, a great honor. If you went to someone's house, if you came to my house, guess what? We don't normally have dessert, but you come to my house, we're going to have a dessert. It's going to be a nice one, right? You clean the house a little bit when a guest is coming, right? You make a fancier dessert. You might make one of your better known meals. Or if you're not making a meal, you order from a really nice place, right? That's what you do. You honor somebody. Jesus knew who his betrayer was, and he still, as the host of the meal, dipped and offered. He assumed the posture of a loving servant even when he knew he was going to be betrayed. Don't ever say it's not your job, because Jesus never did. Let's pray.
Thanks again for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. To learn more, visit us for a worship gathering on Sundays at 10:30 a.m. or get online and check out www.olathewesleyan.org. Thanks again for listening.